Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics as sold through Diamond to retailers for December 2014. This is our last data set of the year, other than that whole big year-end data set, and we'll get to that soon.
Woohoo! We made it to the end!
Oh gosh, yeah, it's an interesting year, and it's interesting the note it ends on, because this was... When I wrote my November article, I had gotten a little confused, admittedly, and I was thinking that Star Wars was coming out in December when it was really just solicited in December and it's coming out in January, you know, whatever.
No, we talked about it last month, we were both under the impression they'd be in this month's numbers.
And, you know, million-ish unit selling comic, if it does that, will be impressive.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, we didn't have the impressiveness, because, I mean, if you look at, well, the horse race aspect. Everyone likes to know who won the month. Hell, I don't know. You know, because DC had the lion's share of the units for the top 300, 39.6% versus Marvel's 38.9. So a 1.51% difference, not a commanding lead. Flip side, on the dollars, Marvel won that with 41.63% versus DC's 36.4%. Okay, 5+% you know, difference there. You could argue that's a commanding lead. Of course, Marvel had to do that with a average price of $4.07 versus DC's $3.35. You could argue the cheaper average price is a kudos to DC, not Marvel. So it's one of those that this was, in terms of the aggregates, a reasonably average month.
No, I think it really was kind of an average month, and I think the first one we've had in 5 or 6 months. Probably since around August. August was probably the last kind of typical month.
It's too bad typical months and average months aren't more average and typical.
Yeah, well, exactly. But September, DC throws the curve way off. With some of the crazy reboots that Marvel did, that kind of threw October off.
Yeah.
November was fairly average. DC was a little lower than normal. Marvel was a little higher than normal. And this time they each kind of lost, you know, 300,000 units and kind of settled back to kind of what I would call average.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it just takes one anomalous kind of an event, be it the death of Wolverine or the upcoming Star Wars or, you know, whatever.
Cap and Iron Man number one in the same month.
Yeah. Well, it's getting to where number ones are anomalous in and of themselves sometimes.
You mean number twos are anomalous?
Well, no, I think number ones, because they're so artificially inflated.
Oh, yes, they're anomalous data, but they are becoming more and more ubiquitous on the stands.
Fair point. I hadn't thought to that of that interpretation. Marvel did, I think, launched 48 ongoing titles over the course of 2014.
That's it?
That's all that I tracked in the top 1,000 comics for the year. But that's, gotcha. That's the next episode.
So that's an average of 4 a month.
Yeah, it's about one a week other than skip weeks, if skip weeks still existed, which they kind of don't. But what's funny is some of those were ones that, at least in one case, a title turned over twice in 2014.
Wow.
So years ago, I had brought up the concept of a growing forest of dying trees, where you kind of have the forest getting bigger, but the trees aren't healthy enough to survive long enough, and they just keep dying off. And that's kind of sort of what we've got. You could argue it's a growing comic market. You know, more companies are coming in, more titles are out there, more comics are being produced, et cetera, et cetera. But then you look at the health of an average title, and it sucks. It's getting to where a year lifespan for a title is highly normal, in some cases long, just because so many things just don't even try for that. They go for the miniseries. But even ongoing titles don't last more than a year or two, much less, you know, I mean, if it's beyond 4 years, that quickly narrows the field down to Walking Dead, Fables, and I think Sonic the Hedgehog. Unless you count, well, and some of the Archie stuff. I'm looking mainly in the top 300 when I say some of these things. So there are other titles out there that are long-lived.
And Simpsons.
Simpsons. Yeah, exactly, yeah. But it's it's one of those things. Launching new titles is getting incredibly challenging and hard to do. Keeping them around for any length of time is getting to where it's almost impossible. Yet comics are widely accepted as part of our culture. People know the properties, the material. They just don't read the books. It's a really bizarre time.
But arguably that's true of lots of things, particularly when it comes to reading. And
certainly, I think reading has fallen by the wayside in terms of popularity and a way people spend their time.
Yeah. Seemingly everybody's got, here's 9 million news stories, but it's just, blurbs on the internet here and there, text, tweets, things, and no one sits and reads a newspaper every day anymore.
I think people do, but they're of a specific generation.
Well, yeah, okay, yes, but it's not the norm in mainstream society. But I wouldn't say the average person doesn't, kind of get the news and hear what's going on in the world.
But I mean, how
books
many people?
Books too.
I was just to get novels exactly. That's where I was going.
I've actually heard people, because I read quite a bit, and I've actually suggested books to people, and I have literally heard people say, "Well, if it's any good, they'll make a movie of it, and I'll see the movie."
On the one hand, I get that, but on the other hand, written prose novels and stuff in the hands of a good, much less a really good author, I mean, some of that's just a joy to behold.
Mm.
It's a fun way to get a story. And there are certain types of stories and certain types of things you can do in a novel that you can't do in a comic book, you can't do in a movie, you can't do in a radio play or stage play or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are just, I'm not going to bother with that. It's unfortunate, but it's understandable. There's so many things competing for our attention, and reading is one of those things that you've got to devote your attention to. You can't just kind of watch the movie in the background or listen to the radio as you drive to work or a book on tape or whatever.
Well, yeah, the book. Don't even get me started on the book on tape. I know it's not a popular opinion. I'm of the opinion that's a whole different. That's not reading. It is something, but it's different.
Oh, it's absolutely not reading. But it's as close as you can get to reading without reading. And you've got, and again, not better or worse. And
yeah, exactly. But it is different.
Yeah, totally. You've got somebody interpreting the material for you.
Yeah.
And comics actually have that sort of a thing. There's graphic audio or whatever that's done, essentially radio play versions, if you will, of a lot of big stories.
Yep.
And I think that's cool, but it's a totally different experience.
I remember hearing about those and thinking those were kind of neat. Have you actually heard any of them?
I have a few of them. I have not actually had the time to listen to them because some of those are like 6-8 hours long or whatever.
Yeah. Multifaceted old geek. So things like Star Wars and Hitchhiker's Guide and some of those things actually got produced by the BBC as radio dramas.
Mm-hmm. I remember the Hitchhiker's one. Yeah.
And those I've been given over the years as gifts and stuff. And those I have heard and actually greatly enjoyed. But I haven't done any comics that way yet.
Well, I've picked up the 52 one that was based on that series. I think I got Infinite Crisis, and I know I ordered the Secret Wars.
Mm, okay. Yeah, that's right. You even talked about that on, I think, one of the previews episodes or something.
Yeah, one of the preview spotlights.
Yep.
And again, it's a great way to get the material out there, but it's a different consumption of it.
Absolutely. So yeah, overall, I think looking back at the breakdown, it's safe to say it was kind of an average month in many ways.
Yeah, very much so. Image, 9.31% of the units, 8.15% of the dollars. We got the usual suspects after that, IDW, Dark Horse, Dynamite, Boom, Valiant, and then, really with Valiant on down, they're under 1% of the total units for the top 300.
Something I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
Just because I noticed it, because I always kind of see, prices and things like that. Dark Horse, 13 items.
Mm-hmm.
Max price $350, min price $350. Did Dark Horse make a line-wide decision to get rid of $399 in favor of $350, or?
If they have, I don't recall them announcing that anywhere that I've seen. And that is always possible that it's just luck of the draw of what came out in a given month.
Okay. Seemingly, Dark Horse used to publish a lot of things at, $3.99 and some of the, and possibly even $2.99, but.
They do have a couple of things that are more digest size, the Brody's Ghost, Empowered, stuff like that. I don't know if those would have gotten on those should have gotten on the trade side versus the comic side whenever they come out. And then the comic, Dark Horse Presents they changed the format of to be a lower price point.
Yeah, but I'm just, yeah, I just, things like, I mean, because things that are on the list, The Goon, BPRD, Conan, Predator, Aliens, Prometheus, Buffy, Hellboy, all $350, and I don't think those books have always been $350. I don't know if they've gone up or down, I don't think they've always been $350.
I don't think they've made a line-wide thing because, well, last month, actually, those are $350. Let me take out the $350 for the Dark Horse stuff that came out last month. Usagi Yojimbo Senso was
$399. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just I noticed something that seemed weird, or like you said, it is possible, but it's not like, I mean, we're talking two Hellboy books, a Buffy book, an Alien versus Predator book, a couple of more Alien books, a couple more Predator books, a couple of Conan books, a Goon. The Massive. I mean, this is kind of the main staples of Dark Horse currently, and they're all at $350.
I'm thinking that's... we'll check next month. I mean, yep. I don't recall seeing anything that indicated they had made that sort of a decision. It seems like an odd decision to make.
And not publicize it.
Yeah.
Unless it was going up, and it was hoping. But I seem to remember a lot of those books being $399 previously.
I haven't noticed a price change on the ones I'm getting, but I'm not getting all that much Dark Horse these days.
Yeah, me neither.
And I'll be honest, a lot of what I keep closer track on is that I'm actually reading.
Yeah.
Going through, starting at the top of the list, one of the things that made this kind of an average month, in my opinion, for December was we only had two items above 100,000.
Yes.
We had Batman at the top of the list, and this is Batman number 37. 113,255 units, which is, you know, more or less par for the course these days on Batman. It's been doing phenomenally well with the new 52. Now, what's interesting about that is that it is issue 37. Why is that interesting? Because it was issue 36 that was in the December Loot Crate box that went out.
What now?
Issue 36, Loot Crate had some kind of a deal, and they put a copy of that, I think with a their own cover, variant cover on it, and had that in the December Loot Crate. But there's no sign of that whatsoever in the Diamond numbers.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, this doesn't appear out of the norm in the least for that title.
Well, and again, this is the issue after that, the one that was in Loot Crate.
Which, yeah, and there was nothing that seemed odd last month either in Batman.
Well, and again, it was in the December crate, so it comes down to when did those items ship, but it looks like that deal was worked somehow that it didn't go through Diamond.
Yep.
Either that, or Diamond has decided to not be including stuff like the Loot Crate bulk purchase or whatever through, you know, in these numbers. And I see absolutely no evidence of that, unless it's a decision that kind of slid in with the December numbers. Because there's clear evidence, if we go back to the November numbers, of a, and I missed this when we were going through the stuff last time, of a promotion that really skewed one of the numbers. If in the December numbers we jump down to Inhuman
mm-hmm.
at rank 97.
Okay,
we've got number 9 there, and down at rank 102, we've got number 10. So yes. Number 9 sold 25,962 units. Number 10, 25,445 units. So almost a 2% drop between 9 and 10. But what's noticeable is the 48.86% drop from issues 8 to 9. Well, 8 came out in November. If we go to the November spreadsheet, which I conveniently happen to have open because I knew I was going to do this at some point.
Okay, I was going to say, I'm opening December still. go to November.
Issue 8.
Yes.
50,766 units. That was up 69.77% from issue number 7. Okay. At first, I was willing to chalk that up to it's part of the Axis crossover. It had Black Bolt. It was actually I don't want to say a true Inhumans issue, because that's kind of demeaning to what Charles Soule is doing on this title, because it's actually got Inhumans in every issue, hence the name. But, I mean, Black Bolt, Maximus, those are headlining, you know, royalty of the Inhumans, if you will. But that's not what happened. What happened is if you look at the retail rank of issue 8 last month.
You see that, yep.
It's got an 84. Now, the item below that with a $399 price point had a retail rank of 26, and the one above it, 25.
Yep.
Well, if it sold between those two, and it's at the same price, why isn't the retail rank, which is based essentially, well, not essentially, it's based exactly on the invoiced amount. Well, golly, they didn't invoice the entire amount. The information I have is that retailers were shipped their order of Inhumans,
mm-hmm.
and that again, but that second copy of each one, you know, they got another 100% of their order for free. Order five, get 10.
They've done that. Okay, so they've done that before.
Yes.
So they just gave away half of these.
Well, they sold the copies that were sold, and then they gave people a matching amount.
Okay.
Now, I got a couple of theories on this.
Yeah, okay, because I want to hear them, because I've got some questions about that. Let's hear your theories.
Okay, first off, a number of years ago, this may have been 10 or more years ago, DC experimented with overshipping.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is if you can get the comic to the saturation point at the stores, at no risk to them, essentially,
mm-hmm.
you'll sell more copies.
Yes. No one will walk in and find it sold out.
Bob Wayne never released what the results of that were.
Okay.
And the rationale for that is, well, why should I pay for your education?
Yep.
Can't fault the man for that. Smart move. And presumably it worked out to their satisfaction. This was also around the time that Marvel was printing to order. And it was good counterbalance. But I don't think that's necessarily what happened here, because why Inhuman? Why that title? Why not something else? Well, this isn't the first big promotion they've done where they've essentially given away an issue of Inhuman. They gave the first issue of that away in
Spider-Man.
Amazing Spider-Man. Yep. They are really supporting this title in a surprising way. Now, my theory here, and this has no basis in reality other than my crazy imagination, I think they're gearing to where the Inhuman population is the explanation for mutants. And I think there is a possibility over the course of 2015 that the very notion of being a mutant is just, well, you're an Inhuman, or a new human is some of the term they're using. But why would they do that?
So you think the X gene is going away?
I think...
Which is a lot of explaining trying to do that.
I think the X gene will still be around,
okay.
but it will be realized to have been Inhuman DNA of some sort. It will change these characters from being classified as mutants to being classified as Inhumans. Why would that matter? Well, a clever lawyer might be able to then argue that the X-Men properties that are out for the movies, well, you can only use the mutants. That's what X-Men's are. And if suddenly they're not mutants, and, I mean, could that mean they're not available for X-Men movies, and suddenly Marvel can reclaim those characters? And this is a stretch, and I fully admit this.
Reclaim, probably not, but do like they did with the Scarlet Witch and, you know, Quicksilver, argue that they're dual properties.
Mm-hmm.
Much better argument.
The bottom line is, can they get to where they can use some of the characters they want to use and can't?
Yeah.
And I admit it's a stretch, but when I see that they're releasing Uncanny Inhumans, that's interesting. They did the same thing with Uncanny Avengers. See, Scarlet Witch was there. I think they're playing some games here, potentially. And between that and, some of this other stuff going on in the Marvel cinema universe and such, I think they're trying to build up the Inhumans as a bigger part of their world and their mythos while simultaneously downplaying the mutants.
With all of those explanations being potential, it makes sense to me. How does giving resellers free copies of issue 7?
Eight,
with no promotional push put behind it, no advertisers, no, hey, this book, this book's only a buck, hey, comic shops got, maybe every comic shop got 10 for free, try to go get one, with no promotional push behind it, what good does any of that do Marvel?
First off, you don't want to tell the consumer that the retailer got it for free.
I understand.
Even though we just did.
I understand that. But...
Well, because it allows the retailer to sell it at full price and make a killing on the thing. Suddenly, it becomes one of his most profitable books for that issue.
Okay.
Now, granted, the fallacy of that is, well, why not continue it on 9 and 10? But I can't really understand why they've given two issues of this essentially away for free, and in the case of the first issue, which is an Amazing Spider-Man number 1, to such a huge audience.
Yeah, 500,000 people got it.
Yeah. Why are they pushing this property so much? Clearly, I think they've got bigger plans for it, to me, the rationale.
It's a weird one. They are pushing it, but when you push it, you don't tell anybody you're pushing it. Are you really pushing it? One argument is, hey, resellers can make a killing on it. The other argument is resellers thought they could sell 6. They ordered 7.
And they got 14.
And they got 14. So now instead of having 1 on the shelf, they've got 8 on the shelves. And the average customer walks in, looks at that, and goes, boy, those don't sell at all.
Yeah, there is that strong backlash possibility.
Especially since nothing has been made about it being promotional.
I think they chose the issue they did on the hopes that maybe the people reading, you know, New Avengers who've been following Black Bolt and stuff might have been interested in whatever and wanted to make sure there were copies there, but...
That's one of those where if you're going to do it anyways, you just make it half price and put some marketing dollars into it and tell people that are reading the Avengers, hey, you can get this one for half price. I don't know.
I don't think they want to give it away for half price.
Well, it's what they did, essentially.
They just don't
want to tell the customers that.
They don't want to have the customers buy it for half price. That devalues the property. If they can get people to buy it for the full price, that's the goal. And if this is the way to get more copies out there, that makes sense. It's you could argue an almost meaningless distinction, but I think it's got a lot of meaning. Right, people will flock to Free Comic Book Day because, well, I can get comics for free.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get that. But
is it an effective promotion?
If you didn't like issue 7 for $3.99 and you don't want issue 9 for $3.99, why would you buy issue 8 for $3.99 just because your store has too many of them?
I don't think you'd buy it because you have too many of them. I think, I'm trying to remember, let me double check if that was indeed, yeah, that was the one that had Black Bolt in it.
Okay.
Who, again, is one of the major, he is the major.
I get that. I remember reading Inhumans number 1, and I don't remember if it was on this podcast or off air, when I kind of went, where's Black Bolt? Where are all the Inhumans I know? I see Medusa, sort of, and nobody else.
Exactly. So if you're going to give, if you're going to put twice as many copies out there, that's not a bad one. That's probably the best issue to do it with. The question is, wasn't an effective push? Is this a title that really has legs under it? Are we going to see this a year from now?
That's one we're doing the, you know, the event book, Access, seems to be doing pretty well. Reprint the whole thing in the final issue of that. You'd probably get it in more hands than just, you didn't want it for, you know, you didn't want it for full price last month, you didn't want it for full price next month, but you're going to want it for full price this month because more exists. Doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
I think they're trying to fill the... to get more copies out there in a time when they feel Inhumans are more interest is around that property.
So, okay. I guess the other argument is, what is it, December? The argument is possibly when everyone goes to the comic stores in May for Free Comic Book Day, there'll be a million in the quarter bins.
Probably, but I don't think that was the goal.
That's a really long-term plan.
I think it ties into announcing the movie and things of that nature.
Gotcha.
Going to Avengers X-Men Axis, which you had mentioned, doing pretty well. We got 3 issues here, and they're averaging, you know, right around, a little under 70,000 units.
Yeah, okay. Pretty well is a relative term. They're in the top 10.
Okay.
There's 3 issues in the top 10. But, yes, it's not 100,000 by any stretch.
Again, we only had 2 in the top, 2 over 100,000. We only had 2 others over 73,000.
Yes.
So, I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1 launched in rank number 3 here, 94,503 units. Mm-hmm. I think that's reasonably strong sales.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it retains those or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say almost certainly not. Just because that's par for the course these days with a second issue over at Marvel.
Yep.
I mean, you look down at rank 25, we got the all-new Captain America number 2. It lost 58.44% to drop to 50,077 units.
Yes.
It lost 70,000. The loss right there would have been enough to hit rank 8. Just the loss. I mean, it's a little mind-boggling because you look at the top, you know, 10 or whatever, Marvel's got a fair number in there. Avengers X-Men Axis, that's not coming back next month. Spider-Man Annual, not coming back next month. We'll be generous and say both Thor and Amazing Spider-Man, the regular issue, though, are. But that's, you know, 250,000 units right there they're just not going to have next time around. Now, Star Wars will more than make up for that, of course. But this goes towards a churn-based system and transient sales of comics.
And to be fair, the Thor issue, only because they double-shipped last month, does it not look that bad. remember, it went from 161,000 to 89,000 between issue 1 and 2 all in last month, and is down another 16,000 to 72,000 this month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, so, yeah. And a book, again, within three issues is at less than half of issue 1. Significantly less than half of that 161,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's why first issues, ubiquitous though they are anomalous in terms of how the title does. It's not even a high watermark. It's, in some cases, twice the high watermark for any other issue. And if you get them in the door and you can't keep them, rethink how you're doing first issues, particularly if you're going to do one every week. And, I mean, if we were to, and again, I'm looking at Marvel here just because they're so aggressive about this. We had a bunch of these are annuals. See, S.H.I.E.L.D., Spider-Man and the X-Men, Angela Asgard Assassin, Thanos vs. Hulk, a miniseries, Avengers Now Handbooks. Yeah, okay, not that many. Really just the two.
But yeah.
Spider-Man X-Men number 1, 61,952 units. This title replaced Wolverine and the X-Men, which had a first issue in 2004, which replaced Wolverine and the X-Men the previous volume for no discernible reason. So, again, these are titles that they are... They've trained readers to only get on board on a first issue, and therefore they have to keep doing first issues on a routine basis. You know, word is that they're going to be canceling, or ending, canceling is the wrong term, ending Avengers, New Avengers, Secret Avengers, and I have no doubt that in short order we will have new versions of all of those. Whether those exact titles or not, I don't know. Don't really care, to be honest. You know, it's...
And which Avengers book was it that got the fake number one?
They did the...
Where it was solicited?
Oh,
looking
right,
on the page, you would have sworn it was a number one, but when it came out, it was 24, which confused
that
everybody and
Avengers.
Got like a huge spike.
That was Avengers itself.
Okay.
Because it's up at 39 now.
Okay.
And if we...
If you look at the chart, there's I think it's around 24. It like pops to way over 100,000.
Yeah, 127,466.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the issue before and after were at around 66,000 each.
Yeah. But and if you remember, looking at the physical solicit on the page,
oh, yeah.
there was no reason to believe there wasn't going to be a number one on that cover.
They are intentionally trying to confuse people. At least at that point. They've pulled back from that. Right. But...
Well, it was weird because, as I remember, there were like six in that round of solicits, and four of them actually did come out as number ones, and two of them were the... You know, the number one next to whatever it actually ended up being.
Well, and this was one of the, I think, the early round of the all-new Marvel Now or whatever.
Yes, I think it was the first one of, well.
And I think if they had more success than other than just this, they would have kept going with that. But I think the backlash was noticeable.
Yeah.
But it comes down to they're selling, and not just Marvel, but the issue number is a bigger factor in how something sells. I mean, the packaging shouldn't matter as much as the content.
Well, and that becomes, I wonder what the backlash was from their resellers. Because as we talk about, I actually am back to not pre-ordering. I don't care for it. I try not to read solicits, you know, whatever. You know, and you do pre-order, there's nothing wrong with that. But what is the percentage of people that pre-order? And then the question becomes,
I think
did the Avengers get the spike for the number one out of people that pre-ordered? Which means half the population who does, you know, let's just call it half, just to make it a nice round number.
Just for convenience, sure.
That doesn't pre-order, never treated it like a number one because they walked into the store and saw issue 24. But did the resellers treat it like a number one because on the page they had, that's what they thought it was. And therefore, did they get stuck with a bunch of those 24s?
I would say it's not a binary kind of a thing, but a three-way option.
Yep.
Those who pre-order, mail order, that kind of stuff. Those who buy off the rack, therefore, whatever comes out Wednesday, that must be the new comics.
Yep.
Any further ahead, they don't look. And then there's that middle ground where you're not truly pre-ordering, but you've got a pull at your local store.
Which is where I'm at, actually, to be more accurate.
Yeah. And I think that's a... It impacts a little both ways,
yeah.
Depending on the nature of the individual and how good they are at keeping their list of titles up to date. Because titles rotate off, again, every year at best. You know, I read a ton of comics, and right now, if I have more than four titles that's on my active orders and stuff that I'm getting every month that predate 2010, I would be surprised.
We kind of talked about this earlier. You mentioned, I mean, there's only like four of them out there.
Exactly. I mean, you got Fables, you've got Walking Dead, and from there it drops off because titles don't Simpsons last. And Arch- well, yeah. I don't get Simpsons or Archie.
Exactly. But yeah.
you know, and that's got to cause a little bit of angst for retailers, I would imagine, of particularly this past year where there's a new Marvel number one every week, it seems like. And not just seems like, it almost literally was.
What would you say? There were 48?
48, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so essentially four a month.
48 that placed in the top 1,000 comics for 2014. So, and I was just looking at ongoings. So
in theory, there could be one or two that might have just fallen out of the top 1,000, even though it's not likely.
I'd have to double check. I'm saying it's possible. Yes, it's possible. That's all I'm saying.
But it's about 20. It's at least 48.
Yeah. You know, and people give DC a hard time for, you know, canceling, you know, original New 52 titles or whatever. They haven't really launched that many new number ones over 2014. I think it was closer to about 14 or 15. Now, granted,
a round of 6 and a round of 8, right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so 12 to 14, maybe 16 at the most.
DC was more likely to have some that launched well below the top 1,000 for the year.
Also very true. Yeah.
But if every time a title ends, they've got to sell me on a replacement book, that's not a winning sales model. You know, you want to sell a reader on a title and then keep them on the, I don't say on the hook, but on the title. And when you've got second, I mean, it'd be one thing if, hey, you get me on a first issue and then I'm good, great. But when I see drops of half on a second issue, your marketing dollars, one, you had to spend. Two, half of them were wasted because you didn't keep them beyond the first issue. I mean, it's transient sales at best, and it just seems so unbelievably ineffective.
I posited this probably on this very show, probably close to a year ago, that I think that turnover is almost inevitable, and it becomes, even for the publishers, a keeping up with the Joneses thing. You know, assuming, you know, again, just throw out a round number. The average reader reads 10 issues a month, and that's going to stay right around 10. Every, you know, and it's going to be hard. The average reader, a percentage of them, and a fairly large percentage of them, is going to inevitably pick up an Avengers number one, a Spider-Man number one, a Justice League number one, and, you know, whatever, the big book number ones.
Sure. But I guess the question,
if the companies pump those out so regularly, every time you make that decision to get one of those number ones, which we've seen the consumers have a desire to do, you know, if you pick up three number ones in a month and you buy 10 books a month, three things fell off your list. You do that for 6 months, you're back. You've done it. You know, I know we're saying the publishers do it, but
The question I have is, I see where you're going with this, and I don't entirely disagree, but out of that 10 title list a month, which I think is low, but okay.
Whatever, but it's a round number.
I'm the wrong person to ask on that anyways.
Yeah, me too, so.
we'll say it's X, okay? You know, be it 10 or 20, whatever it is. What percentage of those are on the list and how many are kind of floating spots? If you essentially had four floating spots a month, you could have tried out every new number one that Marvel had over the course of 2014 without bumping any title off your list.
That's one argument. The other argument is, as far as Marvel's concerned, that means they've got four spots on your list permanently.
Do they?
Well, they
had to spin up 48 creative teams, get 48 different titles out there to get you to buy one issue of each.
I get it.
What level of stickiness does that customer have? How much are they going to stay glued to that title?
I would argue not very much. But, and as I said, again, I think I said something similar to this, and something you talked about earlier, with there's a lot more comics being published.
Publishers.
Lots more publishers. And once you get out of the big two, again, with the exception of Walking Dead for the most part, and the kids' books, they have virtually no ongoings. They can call some of them ongoings, but for the most part, an ongoing means they're going to put out 8 issues if we're lucky.
I'll be honest, I'm at the point where I am rethinking my definition of what does it mean to be an ongoing or a miniseries.
I'm with you.
Which is incredibly crazy to even have to contemplate.
But
ongoing is I'm going to publish it ongoing. Miniseries is I know when it ends. But there's so many. It's was it meant to be ongoing? Was it meant to be miniseries? What's going on?
And you know, and as me and you probably aren't the perfect people to talk about this. Drew might actually be a little better here because he reads more of kind of that stuff. Well, not more, but a larger percentage of. Well, not even that's 100% true because yours is about a third. But is what Marvel's doing, and to some degree DC, and possibly with all the books they canceled and Convergence and who knows what's coming in solicits a few months down the road. Again, if the theory that every time a number one comes out, and we know people try them because they sell huge, something else goes away in theory, okay? You buy a number one and you buy 10 a month, one of the 10 you bought last month, you're not buying this month. With the proliferation of Image and Dark Horse and the other smaller publishers that spit out tons of number ones every year, does Marvel and DC possibly now just have to keep spitting out number ones to, again, stay on those lists? Because if a guy walks in and, I'll try number one, you know, just to keep up with the Image and the Dark Horse and everybody else who's got, you know, half their catalogs number ones.
I certainly think that's a possibility, but I think it's a bad way to compete. I would want, if I were publishing or if I were a creator, I would want readers for more than just an issue or two. Yep. I don't want somebody sampling my title. I want somebody loving my title. I'd rather have, you know, 2/3 the sales, but these people are just hooked and reliable than people who just come and go with the wind.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think it would be interesting to get Drew's opinion because something he says very often, particularly when you're doing the weekly spotlight on the Marvel and DC books. Do you read this? Well, no, I read 3 when it first started. I picked up 2 more 6 months later.
Yeah, he does say that a lot. He bounces around.
And he reads, and I'll tell you, he reads just about every Image number one. Does the number of those that come out every month affect those Marvel and DC books? And is that why they're, therefore have to put out those number ones to compete?
Oh, whether it does for
a publisher that, and using that as a potential example.
It's a great example.
A customer that does that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, whether it influences Drew specifically or not, it does have a huge impact.
Yeah.
Because every new number one, a retailer's got to stop and think, do I even put this on my shelf? How many do I put on my shelf? Mm-hmm. Where do I pull the money from to do that? Because retailers have a lot more of a fixed, you know, budget that they can work with every month.
Okay.
And that's going to be influenced by how the previous month sold, how much is tied up by late issues and stuff of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they literally have a very finite number of titles they can do based on how much shelf space they've got.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we've got a lot of stores that they do Marvel, DC, and that's about it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they'll do the other premier publishers and that's it. And maybe they'll do one or two here and there, but it's selective. You can't put every copy, every comic out there on the rack unless you've got a sizable wall. I do think there are a lot of people who are always looking for the new big thing,
mm-hmm.
and that's certainly going to mean that they're not going to stay on other titles. It's what's new and shiny sometimes versus, you know, going for the long form or the long story. And as comics have moved more towards long form storytelling, the big picture, the epic, you know, mm-hmm. saga, we're seeing shorter and shorter runs, and some of these epic sagas having to go through multiple runs to go tell that.
That is, to me, one of the funniest parts of the whole thing.
I think long-form storytelling is killing storytelling.
You don't have to convince me of that. But as I've pointed out before when I say things like that, when you look at the top 10, and particularly when you look at the ones that are perennially there, Batman, Spider-Man, Walking Dead.
Harley Quinn.
Justice
League.
Justice League, yes. Harley Quinn, I think, is a bad example, but or an anomaly to what I'm going to argue.
Okay.
Those are all books doing the long-form storytelling.
Harley Quinn certainly is not.
That's why I said Harley Quinn's the anomaly. But Harley Quinn's newer to this party than some of those other books we're talking about, too, though.
Yeah, but I think the one that's newer-ish to this party is the epitome of the long-form story, and that's Walking Dead. I mean, yeah, there's been a really
130-some issues.
Well, yeah, 135
that's
issues.
That's a decade.
With really only one or two kind of breaks in the story, if you will.
At this point, yeah, there's been three, really. The two big ones and kind of where we're at now.
Yeah, I mean, by and large, each issue follows pretty much right on the heels of the previous.
Yes.
At one point, that was annoying readers who would get the collected edition because he wasn't putting anything between issues. And they'd realize, crap, I'm about a third of the way, halfway, all the way through the book. There wasn't no stopping point. You know, which, gosh, tough problem to have.
Well, and arguably, not even the trades are completely self-contained. I mean, I read the first, I got on Walking Dead somewhere around issue 55.
Mm-hmm.
So I read the first 50 in the compendium. If you asked me, I think that's six, seven trades. If you asked me to go in and tell you where those six or seven breaks are out of that 50 issue chunk I read, I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah.
I wouldn't tell you where to make the breaks.
Well,
it
I
was
think
one 50 issue story.
I think The Walking Dead is the best example these days of the never ending story,
mm-hmm.
or the never ending battle, if you will, you know, whatever. It's one of those where it keeps moving, it keeps pulling you forward. And so many of these other titles get to the point where it's like, okay, six issue arc, we're done, stop, and reset.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's literally resetting the story, the character, whatever, it's a jumping off point. And certainly every time they end a volume, well, I can bail out here. They have to sell you on the next volume. And when I got into comics, it was a big deal when they took Brave and the Bold and switched it over to Batman and the Outsiders. It was the first new Batman ongoing in forever. Now, I mean, give it a few days and you'll have, you know, yet another Batman ongoing. I think there is a certain amount of, yeah, keeping up with the Joneses. They've got new number ones. You've got to have new number ones. Train people to only start an issue, start a series on a new number one is part of it. But I think there's also an aspect of just apathy. I mean, Batman Eternal's got some decent buzz these days, and it's averaging, what, 48,300-ish? That's okay sales. Granted, they're all still in the top 30, so by that definition, they're strong sellers.
And they're all cloned.
Yeah, oh yeah.
They are ranked 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30.
It is leaking sales ever so slightly. You know, in some cases, a percent. In other cases, you know, a tenth of a percent.
Yeah, I mean, oh yeah. I mean, there's a couple of issue drops here where you've got like 48 issues.
Yeah.
I mean, that's virtually non-existent. But, you know, again, that long-form story, I will say this. I think that book does a phenomenal job giving you something in each issue, more so than many of the written for the trade books.
I would agree with that. I think the pacing on the story and when they've revisited certain subplots, some of it's mm-hmm. been too far in between.
Yeah. And I thought the first six issues dragged a little because it was literally subplot, no resolution, new subplot. Each issue was a new subplot.
Yeah.
And they, you know, so I had that complaint early on. But I think overall they're doing good. When I post this on the forum, I just caught up finally with the Gotham TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's got the same problem.
I can see that.
I think the overall issue or episodes are really good. I think the overall the show's really good. Most of the episodes are just kind of, you know.
The whole show is how does Gotham become Gotham?
Yeah, and it
and
just,
you
they
don't
slowly,
do that in an episode. You build
exactly,
it up.
They slowly add marbles here and there, but not much actually happens in any given episode, issue, you know, whatever.
Installment. How about
installment.
That?
There you go.
Right below the Batman Eternal, we've got Multiversity Thunderworld number one.
Yes.
47,714.
How is that compared to some of those other one-shots?
Okay, first one we had was Multiversity number one. That was around 90,551 units.
Yep.
Followed by Pax Americana, 65,022.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by The Just, 53,301. So not too far from a standard second and third issue kind of a drop. Then it levels out a bit, getting only down to 51,490. And then we've got this one at the 47,714.
And I would assume the last one, Multiversity, I'm assuming it's going to be number two.
Yes.
Or whatever.
We've got the guidebook. We've got Ultra Comics and Mastermen. And then number two.
I would assume number two, you will probably see the rest of them in the 40, in this range, to probably as low as 42. And then that last one will probably pop back up to, I don't know, 70.
I think there's a possibility that Ultra Comics could do better than most of the rest since they're all referencing that. Okay. It may be seen as important.
Okay. So you can see two bumps at the end.
Yeah. So it's the way it charts out, I think it probably would have done similar if they had done it as consecutive issue numbers.
Yeah.
I kind of would have liked that just for the convenience, but that's so passe that they just don't do it.
Well, and those issues are all expensive, too.
Yes.
They're all $5 and $6 books.
Yeah, $4.99 and such. But, I mean, DC is doing good keeping the price down on a lot of things.
Yes, no.
But, yeah, there are a couple. It's like, yeah, that's expensive.
What I actually find interesting on the next two.
Mm-hmm.
One, for Avengers, is this the, assuming we're not talking about the event, this is kind of the main Avengers book?
Yes.
At 47,062, down 13% from the last issue. And right below it, Batgirl, number 37, down 10%, but at 45. The idea that Batgirl and the Avengers are selling in the same neighborhood after about the same number of issues is, I don't know if that says they're doing a great job on Batgirl, or they're doing a terrible job on Avengers, or my expectations are skewed on one or both of those titles, but that seems odd to me.
It is odd. There have been very few times Batgirl has outsold the Avengers.
Exactly.
And
it still isn't.
Start of the run in 2011 was outselling the Avengers title at that point for the first three issues. Then it dropped below. And then around late, say, fourth quarter 2012, bounced above it until that volume of Avengers ended, and then we got the volume that started in 2012. That volume, which is the current volume of Avengers, has been well above Batgirl up until...
It still is as of this month.
Well, yeah, but Batgirl actually, when it retooled to get the new look with the Burnside stuff,
yeah,
it bounced above.
Okay.
But it's neck and neck.
Which means they should probably reboot the Avengers soon.
Which, again, they've announced they're ending the Avengers, and like I said,
there you go. That's right. You did say that. Okay.
It's one of those, it crossed below the 50,000 mark. Okay, kick it. You know, relaunch the thing. You know, and I get it, but it's getting to where there have been so many volumes of these things that it is just, it's hard for me to keep track of, you know, where certain storylines are. Is this is taking place in Avengers, New Avengers, Mighty Avengers, Avengers World, Avengers Undercover, you know, whatever. These things also lack identity. You know, what differentiates the different titles? And it just seems like they're, instead of finding a way to maintain sales, they're playing whack-a-mole. This doesn't work, okay, bounce it back up, let it float down, bounce it back up, float back down. You know, at least with Avengers, they had a good year or two before it got kind of back down to where it was. Year. Yeah, about a year for that 2012 run. I think they are using marketing to get around shoring up the storytelling. If the story was more engaging, more engrossing, I would like to think people would stick with it longer. I mean, going back to your how many people are got a set list of titles and getting a bunch of new number ones, I expect there to be open slots and ones that get bounced out for new shiny. But shouldn't there also be a certain number of those titles that are just there come hell or high water because they love the title so much?
Yep.
We're not seeing that. I mean, by the time we are below rank 50, we're below 39,000 units.
Well, I was going to say, before we get too far down into that, the number one, rank 36, Secret 6. I don't know. Do you have a feeling on it? You think that was a good launch? You think it was a low launch? Do you think it was what you expected?
44,065 units. I think this one is going to drop a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I just did was a quick chart of the miniseries they did in 2006, then where it picked up in 2008, which is pretty much right where it left off.
Mm-hmm.
And then it trailed down to just under 20,000 at the end of third quarter, we'll say, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
This is higher than any but the first half of the miniseries in 2006 did, which was tied in, I believe, with... Was that Infinite Crisis?
I think that was.
And
wasn't that... Because Infinite Crisis had like those three lead-in events, and wasn't one of them about how like
that the might villains, have been villains united?
Yeah, but didn't this come out of that?
My memory's not good enough on that. Yeah. It's been a decade, yeah, just about. Exactly. So
it's been that long.
2006. We're in 2015. Yeah, so
I feel old.
I'm gonna round. I think it's realistic-ish numbers, but I don't see the second issue staying above 40,000. It'll be lucky to stay above 30,000 for long. I think it's too competitive of a marketplace. I don't think the first issue knocked it out of the park as strongly as it needed to be. And I look at all these second issue drops that are so sharp. Yeah. Granted, that's more at Marvel than at DC. And with the... I think there's a certain...
It could already be canceled by the time we talk again.
I don't think so. I would say it cannot. Categorically, it cannot. Because by the next time we talk, the second round of Convergence solicits that month will be up.
You're right. Okay.
We need another month after that. But I think we're in a really bizarre time in terms of how titles are doing and predicting that, because we've got this bubble of Convergence coming. And I think a fair degree of uncertainty as to what's after that. We've got Marvel having, you know, announced the whole Secret War event and major changes coming out of that. So there's uncertainty over there.
Yep.
So, I mean, if I were a retailer right now, I would be probably a fairly unhappy camper, just angsty of what the hell am I going to have to sell after this? Is it going to work? Is it not? Am I going to have both publishers trying to do akin to what DC did, both with 1 year later and the launch of the new 52, of grabbing every possible dollar? And if Marvel comes in at the same time with a counterpunch to that in the same month, all bets are off. It could be I don't say a split vote or whatever, but it's hard enough for people to sample most of what's coming out at one publisher, much less trying to do it at two. And
but if you got a bunch of people coming to the shops trying, it could be a great month for shops.
It's too much risk on the shops, and if I were in that position, I would, assuming my readership reflected what I see in these national numbers, which yep. No store will.
Exactly. But
on that ludicrous premise, I would order more of Marvel than DC.
I agree with you.
Because Marvel just generally sells better.
I completely agree.
Which pains me, because I, again, grew up on the DC stuff. I love both, don't get me wrong, but... If I were to have to say I could only read, you know, one universe moving forward, it'd be a tough call. And would probably be DC, even though I think Marvel right now is doing some better books. I just like the characters better. But it's a lot of uncertainty. You know, when you add in the fact that we're already at a point where, like I've been saying, you know, titles last a year or two. So what was in the top books of 1 year unlikely to even be around at the end of the next. And now we've got these two big boulders being thrown in the pond, if you will, to shake stuff up. I have no idea what my pull list might look like in a couple of months. And that's with me not really planning on making any changes, but just what are my options, you know?
Yep. I hear
you. You know, Gail Simone has a following, and for the Secret Six launch to do 44,000-ish. Again, reasonable numbers, but certainly not what I would look at and say, wow, that's impressive. It's not. It's not bad. And if you can hang on to that, that's a good sign. If it goes up from there, that's a great sign. It's not gonna. I don't think it will.
Yeah. Well, Secret, I was gonna say, going down just a little bit to a book at 43,000, rank 42. Wonder Woman, we talked about last month, the essentially reboot, gained almost over 20,000 last month, and lost 15,000 of that back this month, from issues 35 to 36 to 37. That book went from 35.9 to 58.9 to 43.0. At least it's still ahead of where it had been before the retooling.
Mm-hmm. I just did a quick chart of the new 52 Wonder Woman and the previous one. And
Is that the Gail Simone one?
It had a couple of different writers.
Well, yeah, that would have been the Rucka to the Simone. Okay, yeah.
And it's one of those where I could pretty much guess where various writers came on by the huge spike in sales.
Okay.
Followed by the precipitous drop thereafter up until it kind of slows, rolls to a leveling off, and then shoots back up.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a not even a mountain range, but it's just, it's It's very spiky. And the latest one with the new 52 run has a bunch of issues that spike up, be it, you know, a September event or some other such.
I can't think of any other reason that book would have spiked other than the September events.
Something early, like April, May 2013. April 2013. I'm not sure. I'd have to go look up what happened there.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that makes looking at these charts a bit of a challenge, is just trying to remember. It's like, okay, a year and a half ago, given title, what happened that caused it to go up by, you know?
Well, from the start of the new 52 all the way until the new creative team last month, it was pretty much one giant story, with the September event issues feeling completely out of anything else.
But then you've got issue 19 that spiked up about 8,000 units. That could be a variant cover. That could be, you know, almost anything.
I'm just trying to remember, having read the series and actually really enjoying the series for the most part, going, I don't remember there being anything anomalous or bizarre other than the September ones.
Well, and it was pretty much a self-contained title. It never really touched anything else.
Exactly.
So that makes it hard to attribute to some other deal. But each time this title would gravitate towards around the 30,000 mark, and really the last couple of times it's gotten near there, that's what sparks another relaunch. Or not relaunch. Yeah, relaunch. I try to be careful with relaunch, retooling, reboot, those kinds of terms, because they're loaded. So, but yeah.
19 was the trifold cover.
That would be enough to do it right there.
And it was also the return of the New Gods. That was when we got
New Gods gimmick cover, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when we got. Why is his name escaping me? I'm feeling like an idiot.
Orion?
Orion, thank you. That's the Orion with the gatefold cover, when they did those like mystery covers.
Oh, right. The WTF covers.
Yes.
Brilliant marketing.
Yes, that was that one.
What were they thinking? So I'm looking this evening at this latest round of solicits. First month of Convergence. Chip Kidd has done cover, alternate variant cover, whatever, for everything. And it's just like half a face or something fading out or whatever. It's like, I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason for these. I just don't get the basis of the motif is.
Oh, I gotta look this up. No, I didn't look at them that closely. I just kind of saw they're out.
Yeah.
Anyways, not important. Let's see. Anything else on the list? East of West.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an annual? Is that a new title? The number one? And then also we got a pretty good spike from the existing one.
What is going on there is East of West 16 essentially was kind of the second season, if you will.
Okay.
It started a new narrative thrust there. And let's see, that was 35,000.
East of West World. Yeah.
That was a kind of a handbook issue.
Okay.
Get you up to speed. So that was kind of a reference book.
Okay. So seemingly did fairly well.
I actually read both of those when I was getting,
the week you got everything?
Yeah, well, it was one of the few things that came out the last week of the year.
Gotcha.
So since I'd been stockpiling those off the Image press list, erroneously thinking Drew was still reading it.
Yes, no, you read like the whole thing. He's like, yeah, I dropped off a while ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, well.
I'm seeing these. I wonder. Huh.
The DC covers?
So they're just solicited that way. They're going to be a full image, it looks like, though.
I don't know.
Again,
we've got interesting stuff coming up. And
only because words and things are, like, cut off in the middle.
It's going to be interesting to see how Image number ones do, particularly with the Convergence month when the Secret Wars kicks off and things like that. Because it going back to your question of if you've only got so many titles, where do you pick and choose? You know, if DC and Marvel both come in around, you know, the May timeframe with a lot of big new things, and Image tries to do the usual, here's our half dozen new titles.
Yeah.
That could just be the wrong month for that.
Yeah. I've noticed those color things seem to be color-coded.
Those color things.
On the Chip Kidd covers.
Oh, as to which continuity they're from?
Yeah, the black ones are Crisis on Infinite Earths, the yellow ones are Infinite Crisis, the pink ones are Zero Hour, and the blue ones are pre-Flashpoint DCU.
Interesting. I did not pick up on that at all.
Yeah. seemingly Jeff King is completely the writer of this event. When this was first talked about, it was like he was going to get help from Juergens and Lobdell. And Lobdell is listed on issue one. Juergens listed nowheres, and nobody but King listed on the remaining issues. So that's also going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's...
For someone who's never written a comic book.
They've done that a few times to mixed results. They had the writers from, was it the Flash TV show prior to this one when the Bart Allen All-New Flash series kicked in?
Oh, the CBS one?
The CBS, yeah.
With the puffy suit?
And those guys, it was some of their first comic work, and it just didn't connect. Writing for comics has a lot of similarities to television, but just is a totally different beast.
Well, DC let Brad Meltzer. Wasn't that his first comic book when he got to write the...
Green Arrow?
No, the Crisis, when he killed...
Identity Crisis.
Thank you.
And he did a decent job with that. He did well.
I thought he did a great job.
I don't appreciate the way he took the characters, but, you know, that was a turning point, I think, for comics when it went from all-ages stuff to more sophisticated, mature themes and stuff. Just permeated the entire continuity over it. And not just DC, but I think at Marvel too.
See, everybody says that. Everybody blames Brad for that. Or not everybody, but it's not an unthought of statement. But Watchmen came out when I was 11 years old, and I would still argue it's more mature than that book.
I would agree with that entirely. However, DC had the good sense to say, we can't do this with our normal characters. Go repaint them, rename them, and use those.
No, okay, fair enough.
It's one thing to say, this character who has been a recurring, you know, supporting cast member of a Justice Leaguer for decades has been raped, and then all of this other stuff happens, you know? Yeah. It was... Comics should mature. I don't want to be reading, you know, the old Super Friends style comic or whatever these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that part of why we see the sales the way we see them, there are no on-ramp comics by and large. Yes, you've got Adventure Time, you've got G.I. Joe, you've got Transformers, you've got things that certainly in some cases are geared towards kids, in some cases are all ages, in some cases are mass media properties, Star Wars, you know, to bring people in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to tell not just cheesy, you know, campy, you know, Adam West style stories, cool. But there does come a point where you've crossed a line. And you've taken what was a reasonable expectation about a property and just gone completely irrational with it. One of the other examples for that would be the Thundercats miniseries that Wildstorm did. That was a fundamentally flawed and foolish approach to the property. You had something that was, people would, to me, it's the Underwoos rule. If it's something that you could go to a Target, a Kmart, a Walmart, whatever, and pick up kids' underwear and it's got that character emblazoned on them, you know, you might want to think carefully about doing a really mature themed kind of a story, even if you go about it somewhat obliquely.
They just didn't see, that one just seemed to come out of nowhere. With Identity Crisis, it was Brad from the very, from the death at the very beginning, it was pretty obvious that, you know what I mean?
It was a clear loss of innocence for the universe. Yes, storytelling.
Absolutely.
We're going dark. And it DC has every right to go do that.
Yep.
But there are certain stories that once you've gone down that path, coming back from that is hard to do.
Yeah.
People expect Wolverine to come back from the dead.
Yep.
I don't think anyone's overly upset about that. They may be cynical about it, and I get it. I can't fault them. We know he's coming back. Don't know when, don't know how, don't know why. But that's one thing. People have a very different, and I think you're one of them on this, reaction to the undoing of Spider-Man's marriage, or Superman's marriage, or, you know, other things. They do certain stories to grow the character, and they say, ah, nope, never happened.
Yep.
Just kidding. And I went on a rant on Ant-Man.
I heard it.
Latest Weekly Comic Spotlight. Continuity is all about story. If continuity doesn't matter, story doesn't matter, at which point, why are we bothering with any of this? And, you know, I've gotten some email and stuff with people saying, yep, totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mistakes they made there, it's like, and he wrote the other issue it conflicted with.
That was the funny part. When I was listening to the episode and you went, who wrote, oh, he forgot his own story.
I had my notes all set just to tear into the editors, and then I'd done some research. It's like, I can't do that. It's not their fault, necessarily. But when you've got competing continuities of characters going on concurrently, you know, we've had that with years back, the Green Hornet stuff over at Dynamite, the Battlestar Galactica stuff, heck, even the Star Trek stuff over at IDW these days. And now both Marvel and DC are saying, all these stories we've told in conflicting continuities, at Parallel Worlds, we're bringing them all in. I love Parallel Worlds. I love the pre-crisis universe, the old What If and Exile stuff over at Marvel. But there comes a point where if it can all be any which way, then it doesn't matter. You know, if writers can just make it up as they go along and don't have to do any kind of backstory reading or acknowledgement of I've read their previous stuff, it cheapens, it devalues the cultural currency of continuity and the investment people make in the material. It leads to apathy, it leads to poor sales.
Do you think to a degree that, how do I want to put this? And again, I could be completely wrong on this, but it seems like we went through a cycle where you had old men who wrote comic books for a paycheck because it was the only job they could get, to a group of young kids that came up and wrote comic books because they grew up loving that original stuff and absolutely loved it and respected it, to now there's a group of young, hip writers who are TV writers, screenwriters. Hey, comics are kind of cool. I'll try them. And you've lost that love you kind of had from that 70s generation that had grown up on the 60s stuff.
I think
there's not a Mark Waid, I don't think, among the young comic book writers.
I see exactly where you're going, and I definitely think each generation or for lack of a better term, yeah, generation of writers, even if it's not literally a generation, has taken what came before that they got hooked on, internalized it, and wrote the stories that they both wanted to read then and want to read now. Mm-hmm. And there's a fine line of difference between the two. I mean, Mark Waid is a great example. He grew up on that stuff. He ate, slept, and breathed that stuff, internalized it, and the comics he has produced, in my opinion, have been true to the core of that while telling deeper, more sophisticated stories, yet were still appropriate for anyone to go read. And he did, you know, he killed some characters off, did some stuff here and there, but nothing where it's like, oh my God, where you're, again, like the
Well, but again, I think I'm just, Waid is just, his freakish encyclopedic knowledge of comics history is, but I think that whole generation, the
Busick's another example.
Busick, Byrne, Simonson, I would argue Jeff Johns, probably the last of that generation, that grew up as just massive comic book fans. And the new generation, while some of them are, I'm not sure some of these guys or gals or whoever, and again, and not even necessarily a bad thing, I'm not sure some of them read a comic book before they got the job, or probably before they got the job, but not, you know, they didn't, well, their dream wasn't to be comic book writers per se. Their dream was to be a writer, and they went, hey, comics is hiring. Let's try that.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case, and that's fundamentally influenced the stories we've gotten, the nature we've gotten. Moreover, I would say not just on the creative side, but also on the editorial side. Because if you look at a lot of the big editors back in the day, they were tried and true comic fans six ways to Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And right now, we've got a couple of those left, but not many. Tom Brevoort, certainly a comic geek, no question about absolutely. That. I think he's made some mistakes in how he has managed his public persona, such that I don't feel I can take anything he says as anything but marketing spin. But to a degree, that's also his job.
Yeah, that is his job, yeah.
It's just, you know, it's unfortunate.
And like I said, I would argue Jeff Johns is of that same group.
Yeah, it does seem like there have been a lot of writers who clearly have never read particular comics or enough about the characters. Chuck Austin was a good example of this. He would come on and suddenly everybody had a new personality.
Yeah.
Because, well, that looked like fun. Hawkeye ought to act this way. Okay, you could argue Nick Spencer with Ant-Man. His personality went under a revision.
And again, I don't think it's even, in some cases, I think some of these guys might be amazing, you know, might be fans. But it feels like they went to school, grew up, they didn't want to be comic writers, they wanted to be writers. and they had ideas for novels, movies, television series. And hey, I got a job in comics. Let me dig up that idea I had for that novel 12 years ago. And we're just going to make, you know, that story I want to tell is going to be the character I'm writing, regardless of whether it really fits that character or not.
I certainly think there is potentially a lot of that. I think there's also, though, once you've gotten to multiple generations, multiple takes, particularly after a couple of reboots, revamps, relaunches, where you've got people correcting what they see as past mistakes. And you could have a series of writers who are continually getting Batman back to basics, depending on what they thought the basics were.
Well, yeah, I'd argue, even though I don't care for most of his work,
mm-hmm.
and in interviews, Grant Morrison will tell you that's what he's doing.
Yeah, but, I mean, you could do a series of six-issue arcs that take Batman back to the basics based on the Adam West's basics, the original comics,
yep.
you know, the 60s, the 80s, I mean, just different takes on it, and none of them are right, wrong, but they're all different. And that lack of consistency, the lack of this isn't the Batman I remember.
Well, it's funny. When we were talking about it last month, we mentioned old continuities coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned that Batgirl or Batwoman got canceled. And I mentioned, do you think we're getting the old Batwoman, you know, the old Kane with the purse back?
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and a friend of mine both listened to the episode. Now, my wife's not a huge comic fan, but she's been with me for 25 years, so she reads enough here and there. And
there's
she's
a certain osmosis that goes on, yeah.
Well, and she's not anti them. I mean, she'll there's four or five series she reads regularly, a few mm-hmm. even that I don't read. So, but both her and my buddy, who has been reading pretty much, you know, we've been reading since high school together, went, Batwoman had a purse? Who are you talking about?
It was a very unknown character, because as of the 70s,
is it that long ago?
At that point, she was pretty much forgotten, other than being in a few issues of Freedom Fighters, I think. By that point, Batman Family had ended.
Yeah, jeez.
So anyone who really got in late 70s, early 80s, could have easily missed the character entirely.
I'm early 80s, which means I must have caught him in reprints or 100-page specials or something.
Yeah, so I expect the universes to change and whatnot over time. I expect the lineup of titles to change over time.
Yeah.
But it really, you know, I look at the sales figures we're looking at here and how, you know, the median point here is something that was basically, for a Marvel or DC title, cancellation numbers, you know? For a non-Marvel DC, not too bad, actually. Pretty decent. But then I look at all the sales going down, and then I look at Marvel and DC saying, you know, we're just going to pull everything back in.
Yeah.
We're going to throw everything out of our library, not necessarily literally, but it seems like it, up against the wall and see what sticks. And there's going to be so much continuity flying around that it may energize some people, it may scare some people off. And change is good, constant change is tiring.
Well, yeah. As again, I think it came up on the weekly spotlight. It definitely came up on the preview spotlight. Somebody called in with the pick for Convergence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seemed very excited about it. Seemed like a lapse reader who was very excited.
Brawlinator. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I am cautiously, I'll be honest, I'm cautiously optimistic about Marvel because I don't read much, so I'm going to actually try most of this stuff. DC, where I read most of it, I'm more cautiously terrified of what they're going to do.
I look back at how tight the storytelling was in Flashpoint, and I'm thinking, man, if they could do that with Convergence, that'd be cool. I don't have the faith that they can.
See, that's not even my issue, because Convergence can be good, Convergence can be bad. Flashpoint, again, I thought was good. I thought there were things I liked, things I hated. The problem with Flashpoint was that last 2-3 pages, you know, Pandora and the three worlds warping around her,
yes.
and then everything that came after it. And that's what scares me about Convergence is Convergence may be good, Convergence may be terrible, who knows?
But the last 3 to 5 pages of it are going to potentially haunt us for years.
Exactly. That's what I'm much more cautiously terrified about than necessarily how good or bad Convergence happens to be. Like I said, Secret Wars, I'm kind of the opposite. I'm kind of excited about. I have much less connection to those characters.
Much less at risk.
Exactly. There's, you know, yeah.
Well, and I question how much of a connection most readers have to the characters they follow. I think we've gotten through a period of the last 10 to 20 years where there was a definite star system and creators being followed more than characters.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing right or wrong about that. There are certain creators I will follow them because, damn, I love their work. You know, there are other characters. I just really enjoy the characters. Even if it's lackluster writing and art, it's, I like the character.
Oh, yeah.
But I think a lot of people are more fickle is the word that's coming to mind.
Yeah.
If it doesn't please them for two issues in a row, they'll get off the book. Given the prices, I can't fault them.
No, I totally get that. And like you said, with the star system, it's weird. There are creators I will follow, but there are characters, it doesn't matter who the creators are, I'm not going anywheres. And one of the comments, I don't remember if it was on the message board or something, said, oh, you know, I think it'd be great if you gave us a better idea of who the creator, you know, made sure you pointed out who the creators were.
That was on the should we switch to a letter grid?
Yeah.
Thread. Yeah.
Because that's really, really important to me. And there's, again, nothing wrong with that. But I just, you know, when I was a kid, I walked into that store, it was, where's Spider-Man? Where's Batman? Where's G.I. Joe? I had no idea who any of the creators were, nor did I care. When I got old enough to kind of recognize, you know, Byrne was probably the first one. Okay.
Yeah.
I still want, where's my Spider-Man? Where's my Batman? Where's my G.I. Joe? By the way, did this guy happen to do something else? I'll check that out too.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, oh, you know, John Byrne's not doing Fantastic Four anymore. I got to get rid of the Fantastic Four. No, that never even crossed my mind.
It's commonplace, though, when I see spikes and drops in sales and I can tell where the creative team shifted. Wow.
Yeah, and again, it's not necessarily a good or bad thing. It's just, it's a very different mindset than I'm used to.
Yeah, yeah. For me, it's about the story, and that's why I keep harping on I wish the content was selling more of the issue than the cover.
Yeah.
Because you're getting a new cover every issue, but if the story is not good enough to keep you back, you know, you're only going to stay on as long as, well, that variant Alex Ross cover or, you know, whatever. And with DC doing the themed covers like Marvel did, etc., it's an easy go-to sales gimmick. It's not the meat and potatoes about what the comic's about. And I think there are some publishers that are starting to home in on this a little. You know, I look at the clustering of the Doctor Who titles from Titan Comics, and they're all pretty much in a tight little bundle there. And on the one hand, the Doctor Who is Doctor Who is Doctor Who, but the 10th Doctor, the 11th Doctor, and the 12th Doctor are fairly different guys. You know, but they're all clustering around, you know, 13,000-14,000 range. And it's because they've been true to the property. They're telling good stories that are working for their readers. It's not, you know, big name artist du jour, big name writer du jour. Three issues later, all bets are off, we're getting somebody else.
It's interesting you bring up Doctor Who. And again, maybe I was just younger, so I didn't notice it as much. But you came into Doctor Who with the relaunch, right?
With the relaunch.
What's his name?
Technically, I came in with the Fox TV movie.
Okay, but you came in with...
it didn't have any lasting impact on me.
Christopher Eccleston.
Eccleston, yes.
Okay. I watched Doctor Who, you know, as a kid. And to be fair, Tom Baker was a lot of what I saw. But when the Doctor changed, like, oh, I don't remember it being, and again, it could just been, and maybe it's just the world runs different now, but I don't remember it being a big deal that, oh, this guy, who are they going to get to be, you know, I guess the closest thing I remember as a kid was James Bond.
No, I see where you're going. I guess.
I don't remember the Roger Moore switch. I definitely remember Timothy Dalton. And everyone.
And Pierce Brosnan, yeah.
And then, yeah, I remember, hey, Remington Steele is the new Bond. Yeah, no.
I guess. For me, because it's interesting. You're right. It's the same property, but man, they changed the Doctor. Is that going to change the chemistry of the show? Yeah. Obviously, when you change a writer or artist, it changes the chemistry of the book.
Mm-hmm.
No two ways about that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point when, particularly, they were switching to Matt Smith, and I knew they were replacing Russell T. Davies with another guy behind the scenes. It's like, new companion, new Doctor, new showrunner and writer. What's the same about the show? If those first couple of episodes had turned me off, I quite possibly would have been out of there, but I would have at least tried it first.
Well, and you're a big, much bigger Star Trek fan than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, the only series I'm really, really familiar with is Next Gen. But it's funny, you go back and you watch Next Gen start to finish, that crew changed drastically.
Oh, particularly over the course of the first season. Yeah.
Well, even from even season 2 to 7, I mean, there are some drastic shifts in personality,
mm-hmm.
personnel, roles. But, you know, we kind of rolled with it and, you know, it didn't, I don't know, it didn't seem to matter that much.
There's evolutionary change and there's revolutionary change.
That is true.
Dick Grayson going from Robin to Nightwing was an evolutionary change. Some of the changes we're getting now, him going from Nightwing to Grayson, agent of Spiral or whatever, that's a more revolutionary change. There was nothing that led into that. It worked. I'm not saying it didn't work, and no, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense, but there was nothing leading up to it. It's just, bam, it's happening.
You don't think the unmasking and all that led into it?
Not at all. I would say it actually runs counter to it. If they knew who he is, if Dick Grayson is Nightwing, how do they not have any clue who any of the rest of the Batman family is? And why aren't they pushing him to give him that information?
Okay, well, okay, yes, that'll give you.
To me, I'm loving the series. I think it's really well done. I love the art. I love the story. I'm rolling with it. But there are certain things that if you stop and think about, start to fall apart.
Yeah.
And I got to think that some of why we're seeing across the board erosion in sales is a combination of, well, they just don't take it seriously. I mean, come on, this doesn't make sense. A certain degree of apathy and, well, it doesn't matter. I'll catch it next time they restart the title. You know, it's sad that we're at a point where we've got more comic book based TV shows on the air than ever before. We've got cultural acceptance of this stuff. Reading a comic no longer has a stigma against it, but people still don't read comics. And certainly based on the numbers I see, they don't stick with the comics they read. And frankly, I read the majority of what's on the top 300 every month. And by the majority, I don't mean 151 or two. I mean closer to like 200 or something or more of them. A lot of these I get why people are getting off of. But I also don't think it's that hard to shore up the shortcomings and retool it a little. Again, what they did with Batgirl, big difference, but it's working. But it's also a little weird to see the Batgirl we got at the beginning of Batman Eternal and the one we've got now, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you want to talk about revolutionary changes.
Yeah.
That was... And like I said, it's funny because, I love the series. I think I picked it for my series of the year.
You did.
But then you guys went, well, the first part, the second, and I kind of went back and like, okay, the change was really abrupt, but the individual issues were good all the way through, even though they were nothing like each other by the end.
But for there to be only about a 2,000 unit difference between Batgirl and Avengers, which at one point had topped the list.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
But those things, to some degree, go in cycles.
Oh, in a lot of degrees go in cycle. I expect Avengers to be down, and then it's back up the top for a bit. At some point, Batman will get knocked down.
And I seem to remember there were when Justice League was barely hanging in the top 100.
Well, yeah, when you take out all the main Justice stars, and you've either replaced it with has-been almost Titans or, you know, Infinity Inc. members, I expect it to be lower on the list.
Yeah.
When you've got the Avengers that are headlining the actual real Avengers, Thor, Iron Man, Cap, etc., and they're selling lackluster, you know, that's why it's okay. It's time to pull the trigger, kick off Secret Wars, and end these titles and start something new. But I think it's possible to have something where you can do a better job at least attempting to sustain sales and then build from that. Right now, everything is a matter of stemming the loss and, you know, jumping to a higher ledge to fall from, you know? It's surprising to me how many of these titles are, again, so short-lived, how many are in some cases ending, how many, frankly, ought to end that haven't yet, but soon will. Just the rotation of titles. And again, the fact that we only had four titles over 73,000. We may have months between now and Convergence kicking in and or Secret Wars kicking in. Because, I mean, January and February are notoriously not good months. Now, we'll have Star Wars.
Yeah, I was going to say, January is going to be a fine month.
Well, at the top of the list, yeah. But, I mean, what about the second item? What's that going to be? It'll be Batman.
It'll be Batman at 109.
You know, and then February we'll have Darth Vader or whatever. So we'll have some decent top-of-the-list stuff, but it's also things that we're going to start seeing in 2015, second-issue drops that could be staggering.
Well, yeah, you know that one's going to be ginormous.
And
are discussing that coming up, I'm assuming?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Matter of fact, it's sitting on my stack of what we're going to review next.
Good. I was like, man, it's been a week. Like, somebody's got to be talking about it.
We make a point of doing the reviews long enough after the issue came out, people have a chance to read it.
No, I, I know.
It's important for me to be reviewing the comic versus previewing the comic.
And I was sitting at my desk Wednesday reading it, and you didn't even get it for another 2 days. So.
Yep, that's right. Because I like the discount I get through DCBS.
Absolutely.
But it's also one of those things. If I were getting fewer comics, I'd probably get them locally. But I'm not. So
I've got a great store with a great discount, so there's no need to wait for the mail.
Hey, if you've got a great store, gosh, by all means, support them.
Yep.
I wish I was local to DCBS just so I could say hey to them and, hey, good job. I mean, the fact I've met them like once, twice, whatever, it's astounding. A really good store is important because there are a lot of things that you're going to get on board with late. There are too many comics to find all the good ones before they come out. It's impossible.
Well, and like I said, I technically have a pull list, but yeah, my store is, I'm a good enough customer and in there enough that at this point, when you say it's hard for you to figure out what to follow on, my store's already got it figured out for me usually. I go, well, this ended, we're just going to add this one, and 99% of the time they're right.
I go back to the story I've told a number of times about the guy, Joe, at Comic Gallery in Mira Mesa, California, where his ability to point out comics I was not reading and should be because I would like them, amazing batting average. Yep. And I was reading akin to what I read now. Not as many, because there weren't as many being published.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But it's not like you could point to a DC title without me saying, yeah, come on, I already get it, you know? So those kinds of recommendations, they're worth their weight in gold, because there's plenty of great stuff out there. It's just a matter of finding it. So anything else look exciting in the...
Nothing overly exciting. You want to drop way down just because I guess we should probably mention it. Way down to rank 252. Eric Larson with an anniversary issue, Savage Dragon, up to issue 200. Only 67, but to be fair, the last one we had on the list was 4200, and it looks like five or six haven't been on the list. So, again, nice to see a book where you keep talking, there's nothing out there. We forgot to mention this when we were talking about books that have been around for a while.
That's true, we did.
Savage Dragon's still going. Also, Spawn's getting a new creative team. Spawn's still going as well.
I was going to mention it 183 when you mentioned Savage Dragon. Title that started at the exact same time, give or take a month, as Savage Dragon, which just had issue 200, was Spawn, which just had 249 December.
Right.
So, you know, if Larson had not, you know, been busy publishing everything at Image and doing some other stuff, which got him way behind, he could have gotten, I don't know, another 4 dozen issues out.
To be fair, if he hadn't gotten behind, he could have gotten probably another 100 issues, because Spawn had some periods where they didn't put much out either. The fact that
fair
it's
point.
50 ahead means, you know, a book that actually came out every month could probably be 100 ahead.
Well, and one of the differences, Spawn actually got, I think, 12 issues behind in solicits. In other words, they had solicited a dozen issues, had to cancel, and I think still wound up re-soliciting a few of those again. Savage Dragon, I think Larson was usually pretty good about not soliciting too far in advance of what he was doing.
You wouldn't see solicits for months on end, but...
What got me off Savage Dragon, not only were the interminable delays, but he was trying to do it real-time-ish, so a month was happening between issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made the issues feel like kind of a slideshow of the highlights of the month.
Yeah, I think I got off right before that. He got a little too preachy and heavy-handed for me at some point in the 120s.
But yeah, there are a couple of things that are definitely at the point of having fallen below the radar of the top 300. In some cases, I get the stuff anyways because they're on the small comics list. We're not likely, though, to see, aside from that kind of a deal, like Magnus Robot Fighter over at Dynamite.
Yeah.
That's not a small enough publisher to be on those lists, so it's at 300, rank 300 now. It's going to drop out of our radar. But, you know, anything from Valiant, Zenoscope, Oni Press, Aspen, if they are within the top 50 small press, but not in the top 300, it kind of extends our radar a little bit.
Yep.
Which actually showed a number of Zenoscope titles. A lot of the Grim Fairy Tale things are in this area.
It did, yeah. I was actually happy to see a lot of those. Ralph has gone nuts with the Grim titles, but yeah.
If it's working for them, and it seems to be, I mean, they've got a half a dozen of these things going, why not? You know, go with what works and stick with it. If we look at the price breakdowns, over half the list is $399. No surprise there. Still a surprising number at $299 with about 27% of the list, 83 items. $350, of course, being a popular price point. And $499, we had 22 items there. So,
yeah, $499 seemed really popular this time, which is a little disturbing.
Anything that is an oversized kind of a deal at Marvel tends to be at that point. I think if price were an issue, Marvel's best bet would be to kind of do like DC does with the optional combo for the digital. But the fact that they're forcing everyone to pay the extra buck to get the bonus digital copy is, of course, why a lot of their books are at that price.
Ooh, speaking of which, I did not notice this till I filtered it to prices. That Savage Dragon 200, not only was it way up, it was a $9 book.
It was also... How long was that one? That doesn't say.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it in the solicit information.
I've got to imagine it was a supersized issue. He's usually pretty good about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I...
Yeah.
The other one I wanted to ask you about, I'm assuming you read it. The Star Trek New Visions, John Byrne, was an $8 issue. Was that oversized? Was that...
No. Well, yes. It's been... Clarify the question. Is it oversized for that title or oversized for a regular comic? Not oversized for that title. Yes, oversized for a regular comic. It's a 64, 80 page book. I forget what it's, you know, kind of square bound, whatever. And this, again, is the photo mosaic kind of photo manipulation deal.
Yep. They're essentially screen captures that he
puts
around and puts word balloons with.
And it reads like an episode of the show. Good, bad, or indifferent, depending on your viewpoint of the original series. I would love to see him, and granted, he's mainly a fan of old school Trek.
Yeah, no, obviously, because I'm a big enough fan of his, and even though I'm not that big a fan of old Trek, I read many of his early series,
mm-hmm.
And they were all great, and I'm sure if I had been a Trekkie and understood some of the stuff, they probably would have been even better.
I wish he would either do it himself or work with somebody who's equally geeky about the other shows and do a crossover in this style with all the different crews. Imagine, you know, seeing Picard on the old Enterprise while seeing Scotty on Deep Space Nine or something.
Well, I was going to say we kind of got to see it a little bit on when they did it in the episode.
Yeah, but that was, you know, very limiting, whereas the way he's been able to expand the storytelling possibilities with what he's doing, there are very few limits as to what they could tell.
Yeah.
You know, whereas with the old stuff, they had certain camera angles they could use, certain shots they had to fit into, etc. Be fun. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that pretty much does it, unless you got something.
No, we'll be back before too long to go over the year-end numbers. We got the top 1,000 there, so plenty to talk about on that. So I think that'll do it then. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting.
The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully done in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside of Diamond Comics distribution channels included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic in the English language itself seems to work very differently there.